including this latest one that is, it's fairly newly out. It's Dugan Ruha, thinking in that neighborhood.
That's pretty close. Yeah, it's a strange name. Most people don't know what the word means, and that's kind of the point. I'm introducing people to this important phenomenon, and I'll tell you about that in a second. But yeah, Dugan Ruha. That's as good as my German gets. It is a German word.
Yeah, it begins with a lovely Z, and it goes from there. So there's a Z and a couple of U's in there. Actually, three U's in there. So when people are dropping by, hopefully their local bookstore for more information, they can ferret it out that way.
That's right.
So tell me, give me a little bit of idea of your background and how you got into green architecture.
Well, I am trained as an architect, and I used to practice for about 10 years in Kansas City, Missouri, where I was a principal in a major architecture firm there. And previous to that, I lived in Oregon. And then previous to that, I actually grew up in Canada. And so I'm a Canadian, and I live now in Seattle, Washington, and I run two organizations that people might be interested in. One is the Cascadia Green Building Council, which is the largest green building organization in the Pacific Northwest and British Columbia, and then another organization called the International Living Building Institute, and it's a international organization, as the name suggests, but based in Seattle. So that's kind of a summary. I teach people about green building.
Wow, so that's you've spent a lot of time, I guess, educating people and how to make some greener choices in their construction. And you also, as part of your work, you actually have devised the Living Building Challenge. Is that true?
That is, yes. I was the original author of the Living Building Challenge, which is the world's most stringent green building program.
Can you tell us a little bit about what that is exactly and what it entails?
Sure, and probably a lot of your listeners might be familiar with a program called LEED, which is kind of the industry standard for defining what a green building project is. And the Living Building Challenge is a little different than LEED, and the idea is to ask the question, what's the greenest possible that we can be in today's current environment? How far can we push energy efficiency and water efficiency? And if we were to try to define what truly sustainable means, what would that look like? And what would a standard to guide architects and builders and engineers look like? And that's what the Living Building Challenge is. So it's asking us to go to the furthest point possible with sustainability in a whole category, a whole list of categories. And it really is remarkable to see people, developers, owners, institutions interested in going this far. And typically what we're talking about is net zero energy, net zero water, a very different level of performance than what people even think of when they think of green.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people throw the word green around, and people don't necessarily know that, but know what it really stands for. And then there's also sustainability, and we keep throwing that buzzword around, and it's
right.
Popular, and it's a little bit more descriptive about that. But really, to understand, I've actually had the opportunity to see one of the first green buildings.
Living buildings,
you're right, one of the first living buildings to actually meet the challenge so far. And it's just amazing. There's so many different components to this project.
Yeah, we met in Rhinebeck, New York at the Omega Center, which is one of the first, world's first two living buildings. So this is a building that will never have an energy bill again. It will never have a water bill. It generates all of its energy on site with renewable energy, solar power, on a net annual basis. And it collects all the water that it needs off its roofs and from nearby structures. And it treats all the water and all the waste, not only for, in that particular case, not only for its own uses, but actually treats water from several dozen other buildings and then cleans it. And so it's a very different level of environmental performance. And as you mentioned, a lot of people use the term green and sustainable. And unfortunately, most projects that call themselves green are kind of merely less bad than the normal building, but they're still primarily harmful to the environment. So the Living Building Challenge turns that on its head, as I said, and really asks the question, well, let's not be less bad, let's actually be good with our designs and our construction. And it's really hard at this point in time to get to that level, but now we have two projects that are really lighthouses, if you will, to show what's possible. And more coming. We have about 80 projects that are registered around the world. So we're going to be seeing more of these sort of lighthouse beacons, if you will, for true sustainability being built in our communities.
Yeah, and now there's 6 pedals to the Living Building Challenge, correct?
Yeah, we have, and we call them pedals. Another way to look at it is categories. That's, you know, for people that aren't familiar with our language, because we use a lot of biological terms to kind of describe what we're aiming for, because we're really trying to create a future of architecture that is more like what nature creates in terms of the impact on the environment. But our pedals are the categories that we care about, if you will, in terms of building performance. So we have a pedal for site impact, a pedal for energy, a pedal for water. We even look at things like beauty and education, and we, you know, there's a pedal for beauty and inspiration, and we look at issues of equity. So our program is very holistic. It's not just about energy or not just about water. We believe that you have to look at all the issues that affect a project and their impacts on the environment.
Right, and in the case of Omega Institute's wastewater treatment plant, it's also meant to be used as a classroom and a gathering place, and it's actually a bit of, well, it's a landmark, and it's actually something that you would want to go and see, and I don't think I've ever known of a wastewater treatment plant that I've actually desired to visit.
that's right, and so for people to understand, this building, it is a wastewater treatment plant. It treats the waste for a whole campus. And they get thousands of people a year that visit this campus and use the facilities. And all the water from all the toilets and the showers and all that gets treated in this building. And if they can imagine this, a beautiful little building that treats all the sewage that doesn't smell, that is filled with plants, that see our waste as food. And again, all the components of the building are powered by solar energy. And again, it doesn't smell, it's beautiful, it's powered by the sun. And they even do yoga in the wastewater treatment plant. And I've, you know, never heard of a facility where you're actually encouraged to breathe deeply in a wastewater treatment plant. It's a beautiful thing. And for me, it's the kind of thing where you ask, well, why aren't we doing this everywhere? Why, instead of spending the billions of dollars we spend on wastewater treatment that nobody wants to be near, that it takes a ton of energy, why don't we have systems like this that use natural processes and solar and that create an amenity in the community? And I encourage people to visit this building and the other living buildings. The Tyson Project in St. Louis is another one, and there's more coming.
Wow, and that's great that there's going to be new buildings to kind of to inspire people. Because, you know, again, having seen the one at Omega Institute is very inspirational. I'd love to see the one down in St. Louis, and I'll be curious to see what else meets this challenge. Now, to be a
Yeah, we have projects popping up in communities near you. And that's what's so exciting. It's not just in one place. It's not just in California. And we have projects in California coming, but, you know, it's in Oregon, Washington, but it's in Missouri. It's in Pittsburgh. You know, it's in Hawaii. It's in New York. It's in several provinces in Canada. And now we've got projects in Australia and Ireland, France, and Mexico. These are projects that are showing that there is hope for the future, and that we can actually build habitat for our own species that doesn't degrade the future for all species on this planet. And it's a beautiful thing. And the future is arriving in terms of architecture, and it's the future of living buildings.
Yeah. So when people, for them to become, for these buildings to become living building certified, they actually, that's kind of an all or nothing thing, and people have to do, they have to abide by all the very long list of requirements, correct?
Yeah, you know, we try to keep the process as simple as possible, but the truth is, if you want to call your building a living building, you have to prove it. And so projects have to submit documentation, and then we actually visit the building and audit the building, make sure that that what they are claiming is actually done. And we do this after a year of occupancy, which is pretty unique in the building, green building world, that we actually make the buildings operate for a minimum of 12 months, and then we actually go and audit it. And so that's kind of cool. We really ensure that the buildings are operating as intended.
Oh, that's terrific. So you get to go in and see that and see it at work and see how it came out.
That's correct. And so it's a very rigorous process, and in the end, they get this beautiful award, and they can brag to people, you know, at their achievement, which they deserve to celebrate.
So why did you choose to devote your talents towards sustainable architecture?
Huh. Well, it depends how long of an answer you want. I mean, this is a passion of mine since I was a child. I mean, I've been a lifelong environmentalist. I grew up in one of the most polluted places on the planet. I've seen what humanity can do to a place when it doesn't care about how it operates, and I've also participated in some powerful environmental restorations that showed me what's possible when we as a species decide that we're going to stay here, that we're going to create abundance and diversity and health in our communities rather than just taking from them and degrading them. So this is something that for me is at my core, and I couldn't do anything other than this. And helping the industry see where it is that they need to head, where the end game is, for me, is essential. And I think for a long time, the green building movement, the green architecture movement, it's been a bit like a ship without a rudder, because we didn't really know where we ultimately needed to head to. And so we found that the Living Building Challenge is providing that sort of rudder, a guidepost to where we need to head with our buildings.
That sounds lovely, and it's just amazing to see. At least we're seeing some progress, and there is hope. I one of the things that I gleaned from the conference that Omega Institute just held was that we're not too far gone. I mean, everybody hears the bad news about climate change or the bad news about all these bad things that have happened. But there's also good news that you could change them if you're willing to.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that if you can't read the science and you can't look at what's happening and not be alarmed. I mean, we really need to be paying a lot closer attention. I think that as a nation in particular, we haven't paid the kind of attention we need to climate change in particular, and there's way too many people that think that it's not even true, despite what the global scientific community says. We need to get much more serious about these issues. And that said, the biggest barriers to change that we have to fixing this are barriers of mindset, they're barriers of attitude. We have the technology that we need to have a very different relationship with the environment and have the kind of things that we want to have in our society. We have the know-how. There's incredibly talented scientists, engineers, architects, developers that know how to do things differently, and we're proving that every day. But what has to change is our mindsets. We have to actually want to change. We have to change the way we make things. We have to change the regulatory environment and what we allow, the incentives, the financial structure that creates buildings has to change. And so most of those things are about people waking up to a new paradigm. And that's hard. Change is hard for people.
Yeah, I think it's never easy. And it's still hard to just convince people that there's a need for change. But I think we've kind of come back around to Zugin Ru Hai, maybe.
Yeah.
Or as close to what I can pronounce of it.
That's right. Well, the word, so people have been probably wondering from the beginning, well, what is this? Zugin Ru Hai is it's a real word, first of all. It is a German word, and it means migratory restlessness. And biologists use it to describe a phenomenon that is common amongst animals that migrate. So if you think of geese flying south, or butterflies, hummingbirds, wildebeest, caribou, different animals that or organisms that migrate, before they actually begin their migration, they go through a period of time where their behaviors change. They are, in essence, preparing themselves for a great journey ahead, and that phenomenon is called Zugin Ru Hai. And I use that word as a metaphor. I'm very fond of metaphors. They help people quickly understand something. And I think that what actually the environmental movement and now the greater awareness over these issues and the greater interest in green building all points to our own Zugin Ru Hai. I think that we are actually on the cusp of some significant changes over the next decade. And what we've actually been doing is preparing ourselves for this great change. And so that's where the word comes from with my book. What we find is that while there is a lot of information published on how to design a greener building or how to do different things to green your company or green your business, etc., there is very little out there that helps people understand how do you need to change as a person. What is your own inner migration, and what does it have to look like so that you can become a positive change agent and part of this movement? And that's what I wrote about in this book. So it's in one sense, it's kind of one part green living and one part self-help. And it's really about helping people understand their own inner migration to profound environmental change. And the book just came out last week, and we're very excited about it. It's published by Ecotone Publishing, you will be able to get it at an independent bookstore near you. Certainly can order it from the publisher. It'll be available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all that kind of stuff as well. But I do hope people find it interesting.
Well, it certainly sounds like an interesting concept. So it is partly about, it's about kind of the change we see in the world but about changing your own mind too as well.
Yeah, it's really about changing how you think and sort of understanding your own barriers to the kind of change that is needed. So, yeah, I use a lot of stories, a lot of examples, and talk from chapter to chapter about different subjects that people often find difficult. And a lot of this came out of the work that I do. I get a lot of people that come and want to get into the field that I'm in. I've talked to doctors and lawyers and artists and real estate professionals, and I mean, I could create this long list that have come to me and said, I don't know why, but I want to get into green building and I want to get into the environmental movement. I just don't know what to do. Can you help me? And for a long time, I would kind of, wonder like, well, why? How can I help you? I don't even know you. And then, after talking to so many of these people over the period of several years, I began to see, this linkage, this phenomenon, this Zugin Ru Hai happening, people understanding that they needed to become part of the solution, and they didn't know how. And what they needed, I hope that what I've done is provide a piece of that puzzle for them. When those people come, I can hand them this book and say, well, maybe this will help. And I genuinely hope that it will.
Interesting. You know, one of the things that this makes me think of, people might ask, well, how does changing my mind help the world? But one of the things I think of it is the 100th monkey principle, which I'm sure you're, sure you're familiar with. But monkeys, if there was this one female monkey, I believe one day she went to stole some potatoes from a farm, and she went down to the seashore and washed it off, and she got salt on the potatoes, and it was delicious. And so she taught, or we assume it was delicious, and she enjoyed it. She taught other monkeys in her village or grouping or whatever to wash the potatoes in the ocean to get the salt on them. And as soon as she, and they would keep teaching other monkeys, as soon as there was 100 monkeys doing this at this particular area, monkeys all over the world started to engage in doing that, the same thing.
Yeah, I've definitely heard of that phenomenon. And I think what is important to understand is that we don't need to, you know, to reach everyone for the change to happen. There seems to be a magical, sort of mass of people, critical mass, and when things tip, when things shift. And really, that's what we're talking about here. If you think again about the metaphor of the migration, when enough animals start to go, the flock goes, the migration begins. And that's really what we think is starting to happen. So yeah, we're reaching out to people and trying to help them make change.
Wow. So how are things, what are some things that we can do to kind of be constructive and make better choices in our lives?
Well, you know, it's interesting. With Dzogchen Rukpa, I focused a lot less on, because there are books on like how to lower your own carbon footprint and how to make greener purchasing decisions, and those things are all very important. But what I'm really interested in is helping people be more effective at being a change agent and helping others to sort of wake up, if you will, to the importance of these issues. And so, the book goes through various things that people have a hard time with. Sometimes something as simple as people have a hard time with conflict. They are afraid to offend. They are afraid to create an uncomfortable moment for themselves and for others that they may work with or those in their family. And so, one of the chapters of the book talks about the idea of embracing conflict, and not in a destructive way, not in the way that people often think about conflict as something where aggression is involved. In fact, quite the opposite. The willingness to air out issues, to work through uncomfortable things in a way where neither side loses and both sides wins, which is very important. If you're going to create change, then you actually have to you have to push on things, and that's uncomfortable at times. So there's a lot of little things like that. Embracing failure is another one that's related to conflict. And people are very afraid to fail. They're very afraid to try new things, new approaches to how they do their work, or new ways of living, because they're afraid they may fail at it. And that, you know, fear of failure holds them back from creating some significant change that could enrich their lives and also lower their environmental impact dramatically. And so there's a lot of these things that I talk about in the book where we really need to look at why we have the barriers that we do to getting to the place that we need to get to be effective change agents in our own lives and in our workplace and with our friends and family, etc.
Wow.
So that's clear.
It's really the big picture stuff, which is, you know, that's important too. I mean, everybody can read the 50 Simple Things You Can Do to Save the World, and that's a good book, and I recommend it to everybody. But there needs to be a big picture look as well.
That's right. That's right. You got it exactly.
Well, I like that you telling people to embrace conflict or to not fear it as much, because, you know, I've always said that if people just sit down and shut up, then we're never going to get anywhere.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. We can reach a much higher level of understanding of other people, if we're willing to push on the things that frustrate, that hold us back from having a deeper relationship or a deeper collaboration or whatever it is. I hope that the stories, the lessons that are embedded in the book, lessons that I've learned from some amazing mentors that I've had, that I've been lucky enough to work with, people like Bob Birkebeil, who is my mentor, who is kind of one of the founders of the green building movement, and Bob's mentor was Bucky Fuller, and there are some lessons from Bucky Fuller that are in my book, and many others. So I think that this book will help a lot of people that are interested in making change in terms of their own careers, or helping their company become greener. This book will help them become more effective at doing that, is my belief.
That's great. Well, Jason, we're just about out of time, but if people want more information, where can they look?
Well, definitely I have a few websites I'd love them to go to. One of them for the Living Building Challenge is the International Living Building Institute website, and that's www.ilbi.org. For Cascadia, it's cascadiagbc.org, and they can learn more about a lot of the work that I do there. And then for the book, I encourage people to go to ecotonedesign.com, and that's ecotone design.com. Or just Google me, and I have my own website, Jason McLennan, that links you to all these websites as a sort of a master hub. So I'm pretty easy to find.
Well, Jason, I'd like to thank you for being on the program tonight.
Well, I've had a great time, and really appreciate the invitation, and happy Thanksgiving to you and all your listeners.